We were examining how the mind of Christ, the spirit of the Christ, the soul of the Christ, the principle of the Christ, the life of the Christ, the truth of the Christ, and the love of the Christ is specifying itself, is individualizing itself as that which I experience as my Christ mind, my Christ spirit, my Christ soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And that, as that individualizes itself as my individualized Christ consciousness, that does not separate that consciousness from the whole Christ consciousness, from the whole consciousness of the divine subjective being itself. But as we were exercising, we were seeing the wonderful potential of knowing, for example, that that Christ mind was the individualized Christ mind of my being, and that that was saving me from the counterfeit belief that I could have a mind separate from the Christ, that I could have a mortal mind. That that spirit of the Christ was the spirit of the Christ consciousness of me, and that that was saving me from the belief that I could have a material consciousness separate from the one infinite Christ consciousness. That the soul of the Christ is the soul of my real Christ, and that that is saving me from the belief that I could have a corporeal consciousness, a corporeal or a mental, a psychic consciousness. That's a biggie, really. Many times people feel that they're experiencing consciousness when in reality they're experiencing a psychic mentality that exists in what we would call the collective consciousness or the collective belief systems. That the principle of the Christ is the principle of my Christ consciousness, and that that saves me from the belief that my consciousness could be unprincipled, could be separate from principle, could be outside of principle, could be, if we explored the numerals, unstructured, unscientific, unsystematic. Whereas in reality, that can't be so, because the principle of the Christ has the capability within itself of specifying all that it is and becoming the principle of my Christ consciousness. That the life of the Christ is truly the life of my individualized Christ consciousness, and that that which is my consciousness has no other life, has no other existence. It saves me from the belief of having a mortal consciousness, really. Kind of like a human Maya consciousness, rather than the fact that the only consciousness I can ever have is that consciousness which is a living consciousness within the life of the Christ. That there is only the truth of the Christ, and that the truth of the Christ is the truth of my Christ. It's the truth of my Christ consciousness, and it's the only truth about my consciousness. And it spares me and saves me from the belief that I could have a false consciousness. I can't. I don't even control it. Truth itself is, and it is specifying as its individualized consciousness. So the only consciousness that is anyway is that which has come from truth. It determines it. It really is affirming it from within. So that Christ consciousness is my Christ consciousness. And it cannot be in error. It cannot be a false consciousness. I cannot have a consciousness that is untruthful or that is unlike truth. That the love of the Christ is the love of my own Christhood, my Christ consciousness. And it spares me from the belief that I could have an imperfect consciousness, a consciousness that is separated, not unified, pulled out of the whole, because that love really says that it's an integrated consciousness, it's a perfect consciousness. And if that perfect integrated consciousness, that love consciousness, is my consciousness, then my consciousness too must be perfect, integrated. Isn't that super? We think, and many of us have seen for years that the mind of Christ was our mind, but somehow we left out the rest. That the spirit of the Christ is our spirit, and the soul of the Christ is our soul, and the principal life, truth, and love of the Christ is the principal life, truth, and love of the Christhood of our own being. It's a fabulous treatment, but it's true. It's just true. Because the whole infinite ideal truth has the capability within itself of individualizing, specifying, stroboscoping that which it is. Isn't that good? And it doesn't lose any part of itself by doing that. You can see that you could take that through the numeral characteristics of those seven synonymous terms and just get a fuller and fuller, more detailed picture of what your own Christhood really is and how the opposite, the counterfeit, is just not possible. In this place value also, something I didn't bring up before, is divine mind reading. We've all heard a lot about that, and some of us understand it very well, and some of us not too well. But this is really the place value of divine mind reading. It's really the place where that infinite mind we've just said, is able to specify itself into infinite calculations of that mind, and that each one is perfect, that it fills the need, that it answers the need, whatever. It's the right calculation that solves the right positive problem. I'll tell you how this place value comes to me all the time. Something will knock on my door, and it can be something within my own consciousness or something that appears in my objective experience, or someone calls on the telephone. Anyway, a so-called problem arises. And, of course, you know what we do with problems. We throw them in the nearest trash can. That's fine. We do that. But you can't just ignore them. You can't just throw them in the trash can and ignore them. They're, you know, the Christ signal that we heard about a year ago when we were flowing the laws of the Christian Science level, where it was knocking and knocking and saying, you know, you're not seeing something here. There's a truth that you're missing here. And that's usually what those knocks on the door are, that look like opportunities or problems or however we want to look at them. So one of those knocks on the door, and you say, fine, that shows me that there's something I have to look at. That's right, for as far as it goes. Certainly you don't want to look at the problem, because that doesn't have any truth content in it at all anyway. It's just the knock on the door. At that point, you really put the problem aside, throw it away, do whatever you want to do with it, but don't pay any attention to it. It's just the signal. Then what we really need to do is find ourselves in the consciousness of this law, knowing that behind the appearance of that so-called problem or that so-called knock on the door is really a positive equation, really a positive calculation, that what appeared as a problem was just the appearance of a negative calculation or a miscalculation. But that miscalculation, so-called, is really the miscalculation about a true calculation. It's the misunderstanding or the misseeing of a true calculus, right? It's because we said before that about stroboscoping, you know, focusing in on something, it's really a belief that you're focusing improperly, so that you're taking in an equation, but you're not seeing it in correct focus. Therefore, you don't get the right answer. I mean, something is mixed up in the problem and the answer, usually at that point. So you can see that if you know that that so-called problem, that knock on the door, is just to lead you to that true equation in consciousness. Well, what is it that knows the true equation? The only thing that knows is the whole truth, because it contains within itself all the specific truths, all the specific equations. So all we have to do is get in to the flow, the heart, the feeling of this law, this place value, and let the one infinite truth reveal, really, in our consciousness, the specific truth that is really behind the appearance of the miscalculation. And then you still don't do anything with the miscalculation, because you don't have to worry about 2 plus 2 being 5. You only have to get very clear on the fact that 2 plus 2 is 4, or whatever the case may be. So divine mind reading, I really feel, is indispensable. I mean, I don't know what we would do if we didn't have it, because how else would you know what the true equation was behind the false appearance? It would be guesswork forever. You know, well, maybe it's this, well, maybe it's that, well, I'll try a little mind, well, I'll try a little spirit, well, I'll try a little soul. You know how the grab bag of the synonymous terms. Well, I'll try a little of this law, and I'll try a little of that law, but it's really a random processing. It's just a hit or miss kind of thing, and you may hit it and handle it, or you don't hit it and you don't handle it. I mean, that's the trial and error method is very inadequate. So if you have cultured this place value within your consciousness during so-called good times, then when those opportunities arise, it's very simple. You just flow quietly into this place value. At that point, you may or may not have to exercise it. I don't know. It depends on how cultured it is in your consciousness. If the place value is really cultured in your consciousness, and you really know that the mind of Christ is your mind, and that it knows all equations, and it knows all the right equations, and it knows this specific right equation, that it has a scanner that just can zero right in, and you trust that, it'll just do it. You may not have to work at this place value. I don't, to be honest with you. I just get quiet, and I know where to go. And you will too. Maybe you can do it right now, but if you can't, you will. All you have to do is culture this law in consciousness. And after a while, you'll just be able to grow very silent, experiencing really your own Christ consciousness, and in some kind of silent inward knowing, know that the mind of Christ knows the specific equation that is needed for this particular so-called situation, and it'll give it to you. And sometimes it gives you a series of them, because it's not always a simple equation. It's not always a simple truth. Sometimes it's a whole series of truths. Sometimes it's a combinations of truth. It could be many things. But whatever the specific answer is, it will give it to you. And that's a great treasure, because there's no random looking around for the right answer. The Christ consciousness knows all the right answers, and it will give you the specific answer to meet your need. Isn't that great? So from that, we will go on to the law of eternalization. So far in the law of spontaneity, which covers the whole level of absolute Christian science, we have focused on the Word, the law of life, truth, and love, the standpoint of the Creator. We've just finished focusing on the Christ, the standpoint of the arrow, the translating process that goes on within this circuitry that enables the divine subject to objectify as ideas. Now we're going to focus on ideas. We're going to focus on the intersect of absolute Christian science with Christianity. And that intersect also is governed by a law. And that law is the law of eternalization that is symbolized by life love, right? The emphasis, I guess, on life, but I kind of feel that they're even here. Eternalization would say life, but I really feel that the containment of love is equally present, if not even more so. So I'm not sure that I could stress one rather than the other here. But the point is here that the focus is on ideas. The focus is on the ideas that have been brought out by that wonderful divine subjective principle that had the ability in the Christ to translate, that had the ability to specify itself as individualized ideals, individualized idea. So here in Christianity, we have those ideas. But the belief would be, well, they're there, but maybe they just, you know, get lost or not stay or What really maintains them? What really sustains them? What really keeps them there and holds them there? What protects them? What provides for them? Etc., etc. Life and love represent, shall we say, the divine father, mother that are forever providing for and protecting their so-called offspring, their ideas. So life and love there really represent not only being the source that is supplying the ideas, but sits in the place of that objectified idea, really defining that which eternalizes it, that which preserves it. And it's just great. When you get in touch with this law, you will always, forever and ever, feel provided for and protected. There's just a wonderful security that comes from sitting in the consciousness of this law of eternalization, where life is just always maintaining its idea, it's sustaining its idea, it's feeding and providing and giving and pouring forth and promoting. You just get this great feeling of an onrush of giving that happens from the father sense of the divine parent of being. And you get a wonderful sense of the preserving and accepting and embracing and containing and nurturing and holding and caring for, cherishing, that happens with love. Really, the mothering sense of the divine parent that exists within being. So think about that for a minute. I just don't think that there's one of us that really doesn't feel that we have to sustain ourselves or maintain ourselves or provide for ourselves, whether we're talking about material provision or the provision of ideas or whatever. Most of us seem to operate under the false belief that we must be the father, that we must provide everything we need for ourselves, and that we must be the mother, that we must protect and nurture and care for and cherish all of that for ourselves, and not just for ourselves, but, you know, for our children, for our universe, for our whatever. We have a wonderful mindset for feeling that we are the human parent that must sustain and protect the idea, even the idea of science. It's a false belief there too, and yet we all fall under it. You know, if I don't do this, it won't be maintained. You know, if I don't do this, it won't be protected. And it's a big lie. Absolutely a big lie. That's all there is to it. And I face it all the time, and I just, you know, just have to get over it. No. The divine infinite father itself, the divine parent in its provision sense, is providing for its idea. It's maintaining it. It's sustaining it. It's conserving it. It's feeding it. It's flooding it with everything that it needs. It is doing it. And the divine mothering of the divine parent is forever protecting its idea. I don't have to protect it. It is protecting its idea. It is taking care of its idea. I know on the 73 tapes at this place value, Max brought out all the people that have felt for years that they had to do protective work for this or that or something else. No. Love is protecting. It's doing the protecting. I don't have to come in and believe that I'm human mother and do the protecting. It's protecting. I must accept that it is protecting, the divine infinite love, which is the protection, is protecting. It's a law. It is always going on. I don't have to do an exercise to make it go on. I don't have to align with it to make it go on. This law is at work always, no matter what. All right? So the idea or the ideas are being sustained. And they're being protected. If that doesn't free you, I don't know what will. Really, they are being sustained and they're being protected. The infinite idea, even, is being sustained and it's being protected. It's being eternalized and preserved by light and love. And I don't have to do it, and I jolly well better not do it. Because if I think that I have to do it, I get in the way, and then I don't experience the fact that it is doing it. I don't know about the rest of you, but anyone who's been around me a lot knows that the one I'm always tossing out is human mother. She just gets in there all the time, and I really just, go to battle, and then after a while I don't go to battle. But there's always a time of coming face to face with the fact that there is that law existing in being where the idea is forever eternalized and preserved and I don't have to do it. And I mustn't do it and I shouldn't do it. It is doing it. Okay, so life then is eternally providing all that being is. It's providing eternally all the good, for example, that could ever be. And love is caring for everything. Always. That's really a rough flow of this law and that place value. But if you'll turn the page, there's more. Maybe this is a little different way of looking at it. You have love, really an infinite divine love. If we were maybe to be specific, the love that is really at the point of divine science rather than absolute Christian science, but that love represents the divine object, the self-containment of all. And this law of Christianity and absolute Christian science really feeds from that place value. It's really a translated sense of that place value. And it really is saying, and that which has been objectified, that idea, is eternally maintained and sustained and conserved and fed and upheld by the principle, by the divine parent, the divine subjective being that created it, by the being that caused it to be. And that which has been objectified, that idea, is always preserved and accepted and embraced, contained within, nurtured, held, protected, cared for by that principle. The divine parent, the divine subjective being that caused it to be. Clear? Okay. The identity of the divine subjective being, the divine parent, is none other than mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That was very clear in the word, where it stated that which it was. Okay? So, therefore, if we want to see this law through a prism, it's easy to see that it's really the mind of that divine parent, the spirit of that divine parent, the soul, the principle, the life, the truth, the love of that divine parent that is eternally maintaining and sustaining and providing for their idea. The idea that they have caused to be. In other words, they are fathering their idea. And that divine mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, which is the divine parent, is the parent that is always preserving and caring for and nurturing and protecting their objectified idea. The idea of their being. They are mothering, really, their idea. Is that clear? Okay. So you can see if that's true, that that explodes into an exercise. Also, where the synonymous term as representing that divine parent is eternalizing that which it is as idea. That's a little higher position. Can you hear that? That the divine infinite being, the divine parent, that divine mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, are eternalizing what they are as idea. They're really objectifying what they are and eternalizing that. Okay? They're eternalizing their objective state. And they are preserving that objective state. They are preserving what they are. Okay? So if you want to explore that through the numeral characteristics, as we did in Life, Truth, and Love, and somewhat in Truth, Life, and Love, you can see that mind is eternalizing its intelligence. It's eternalizing, preserving its basis, its law. That divine mind is maintaining the power of its own being, and it's preserving the power of its own being. Can you follow what I'm doing? All right. It's giving its information. It's eternalizing its information for itself. That divine mind is taking in its information, holding it, containing it, won't let it get lost. That information bank of ideas that is stored within mind can't get lost. It's preserved by this mothering love aspect in law. Okay. By the same token, you can use combinations if you feel to, but don't if they get confusing. That mind, for example, is eternalizing the power of its intelligence. Therefore, the power of intelligence could never be lacking. It couldn't. It could never be taken away. Because mind itself, in this law, is eternalizing the power of its intelligence, and it's preserving the power of that intelligence. Can you see? Spirit, for example, could be eternalizing its own substance. It could be eternalizing its own reality. It is eternalizing its own reality. And it is holding that, taking it in, keeping it, containing it, nurturing it, cherishing it. I don't have to. It's doing it. Or you could use combination in spirit. That spirit was eternalizing the mind of its spirit. It was eternalizing the law of its substance. That it was preserving the law of its substance. That it couldn't provide a lawless substance, that it couldn't take in a lawless substance, or a law of a material substance. Isn't that what we do a lot, or could do? That very divine spirit is providing the law of its spiritual substance, and it's preserving that law of spiritual substance, and it couldn't provide a law of material substance, and it couldn't preserve a law of material substance. Handles a lot, huh? Another combination in spirit, possibly, that divine infinite spirit was eternalizing the soul of itself. So it's therefore eternalizing the identity, let's say, of its substance. And it can't not provide the identity of that substance. The identity of any other substance could not be eternalized. It isn't. Or maintained or supported. That spirit itself is really supporting and preserving the identity of its substance or the structure of its substance or the individuality of its substance or the consciousness of its substance or the perfection of its substance, and that the opposite is not possible. And the real belief within this law is that the fact, let's say the perfection of substance, wouldn't be eternalized. The real counterfeit here is not just the counterfeit of the combination, but it's the counterfeit of the law, is that the perfection of substance would not be eternalized, would not be maintained and sustained as idea, that the idea would just disintegrate or get robbed of its nature, that it wouldn't be protected and preserved. But it is. And we must accept that it is. And I really don't know of a better way of accepting all of these details and all of these calculations, except to exercise through the infinite almost possibilities of what's really implied when one says that that divine parent, that divine infinite being, is maintaining and protecting its idea. Because the being implies so much, and the idea implies so much. I have drawn you a little diagram here, and in order to be very clear at least once, you'll notice there are, instead of one page here, there are two. And I flowed through the fact that mind is eternalizing its intelligence of intelligence, that it was eternalizing the basis of its intelligence, the law of its intelligence, the power of its intelligence, the information of its intelligence, the substance, reality, order, the only intelligence, that it was eternalizing the identity and rule of its intelligence, the structure, system, and science of its intelligence, the isness, the existence of that intelligence, the individuality or the method of that intelligence, that it was eternalizing the consciousness, the form, and the whole of that intelligence, and then on the next page, the perfection, the totality, the design, the very integrated being of that intelligence. And not only is all of that true of its intelligence, but it is eternalizing all of that of its basis, of its law, of its power, of its information. Yes? And it's not only eternalizing that, but simultaneously, instantaneously, it's preserving that which it is as idea. So it's preserving its objective state. It's preserving its intelligence, and it's preserving the intelligence of its intelligence, the basis and law and power and information of its intelligence. It's preserving the substance and reality and order, the only intelligence. It's preserving the structure, no, the identity and the rule, the structure, system, science of its intelligence. It is preserving the very isness of its intelligence, the individuality, the method, the very existence of its intelligence. It is preserving the consciousness, the form, the whole of its intelligence. It is preserving the whole. It isn't just preserving a part. It's preserving the whole of that intelligence. And it's preserving the very perfection, the integrated being, the totality of that intelligence. Isn't that marvelous? And as it's providing and preserving for that intelligence, it's doing that for every other idea in being.